I'm not a huge fan of spicy foods, but I do like a bit of spice in other areas of my life. Reality TV fights make it spicy. My margaritas make them very spicy. And when it comes to the spice cabinet you keep beside your bed, you gotta have a wide variety of spices to keep things heated up. If you've been looking for some more flavor to add to your life behind closed doors, Adam and Eve can help you bring the heat with some fun new items to turn up the temp between you and someone else, or if it's a single girl summer, there's plenty of options for those of you riding solo this year. Adam and Eve is offering 50% off just about any item, and they'll include free shipping and rush processing so you can spice things up ASAP. And you don't gotta worry about your neighbors noticing your delivery. Adam and Eve ships things out in discreet packaging, so you and Deborah down the street don't have to make awkward eye contact when you get your mail. Just go to adamandeve.com and select any one item and select, just enter offer code Abby at checkout. That's ABBY at adamandeve.com. This exclusive offer is specific to this podcast, so be sure to use code Abby to get your discount code Abby.
Hey, Heartbreakers. Welcome back to another Breakdown bonus episode. And today I'm joined by a co-host who has never been on the podcast before. This is my coworker, Amber.
Hey.
I don't know why I said it like that.
I know. It's like, how do I make an introduction that's both charming, but not too much?
Yeah, I failed. I failed there.
Great. Well, welcome to the podcast, Amber. I brought you on today to talk about learning to trust again after a relationship, but also just to have a general reaction to the episode, period. So you also listened to the episode, so you, like everyone tuning in, can commiserate with the person that I interviewed in just the horribleness that was this breakup. And I felt so bad for her because when I first had her, I do like these screening calls where I'll kind of get like a better feel for the breakup story. And when I asked her, I was like, oh, what are the red flags that you saw? And that's my first question that I ask anybody before I get them on the podcast. I'm like, what did you ignore? And mm-hmm. when I first talked to her, she was kind of like, there weren't really any red flags. And then when we got on the call, she was like, well, actually in hindsight.
Yeah.
And the problem is with hindsight being 2020 is you have the context of what actually happens and you start to piece together the red flags with this relationship. So for you, I'm curious, like if you were put in a situation where your girlfriend is deleting their social media, asking you to not be in their TikToks, like in that moment, do you think that would have been a red flag for you, or do you think you would have been blinded by love?
Is she hot?
I know, that's always my question. Like on a scale from 1 to 10, because I'll ignore it if she's above a 7.
Yeah, we have to admit, because we do tend to ignore a lot of red flags when we're really attracted to someone or we think we have a connection, you know. But I gotta say, if it's like a new relationship, I might sidestep some red flags because of what I think this could become or their potential. But you're right. In hindsight, talking with it with your friends, and you're like, oh man, I should have known. Man, when he brought out that knife, I probably should have taken that as a red flag. Why did I ignore that? You know, that's a weird analogy, but yeah.
I think a knife should be in a different category than red flag. Like maybe like a red siren. Like, hey, if they bring out a knife, that's your sign to run. That's your sign to get out.
It's time to leave.
No, literally. So I think it honestly depends on how long I'd been in the relationship. For me, if I had been dating somebody for, let's say, 4 weeks and they don't want me to be in their TikToks, I would take that as, oh, you're not ready to hard launch our relationship yet. But they were dating for, let's say it was 7-8 months at this point. And at that stage in the relationship, I would have been like, why are you trying to hide me? My trust issues are starting to flare up a little bit, like a bad rash. Why don't you want me in this? And I think in the moment, especially because he deleted his social media, it would be so easy to just be like, oh, well, he's doing something for his mental health, which is how she justified it. Now knowing that he probably didn't want to have to continue to give excuses as to why she's not on his social media, like it makes so much more sense.
Especially if you've already had that conversation of exclusivity. Are we together? Is it just us? And after a certain amount of time, it's almost assumed that you're together. Why wouldn't you want anybody to know?
Your social media is kind of like your own history book. And that's also like that something people bring up is, do you delete photos of somebody once you break up with them? And I'm in the camp of that was a part of your life. And unless it was a horrible breakup, like i.e. they brought out a knife.
I swear, listeners, no one has ever brought a knife out on me. We're good. I promise.
I was about to say, I'm like, what red flags? Yeah, let's get into this. Amber, what red flags have you ignored in relationships so we can get a better idea of your barometer? Because if a knife is your idea of a red flag, I'm very curious to dive into your relationship history.
That was a nervous joke that slipped out of my mouth. Real red flag, one that I ignored that I know for a fact, was when you meet someone online, because that's kind of society now. And then they tell you that they're going to meet up with you, but they always have an excuse why they can't. that kind of thing. There's always a reason why they can't meet up with you. Clearly they're catfishing you or they're lying or something isn't right. I've ignored that so many times thinking, well, maybe this time will be different. But, you know, it was just like, I don't want to say desperation, but just knowing or feeling, I guess I should say, that something good could come out of that if you just stick to it. You know, I ignored that. Like, yeah.
Because it's like, oh God, if that one thing would just go away, then this whole relationship or situation would be perfect. But the
problem, could skyrocket if you would
if they would just put down the knife. I always say the red flags that you ignore in the beginning of the relationship are always going to be the ones that come up towards the end. And so if this person is hiding you in TikToks or deleting their social media or being weird about it from the get-go, chances are you're going to get an email that they're cheating on you with some other woman who thinks that they're the main chick, but really, really.
What does that subject line even look like? Like, what makes you open that? Like, what?
The subject, well, in this episode, the subject line was her boyfriend's name. So picture this, you wake up and you click on the, or you just see an email with the subject line. And let's say me and you are dating and it's just Amber Jones. And I'm like, T.
What's this about? What?
What's this about? Yeah,
what like, does she do?
Who's talking about my girl? What?
Yeah,
and
okay, I get you.
Click on it and then it ruins your life.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not clicking on anyone's names anymore.
Yeah. And then you bring out your own knife, but for different reasons.
Yeah, yeah, it's time for vengeance.
I'm a cut a bitch is what that is. But can you imagine a worse way to find out that, well, actually, I take that back. I can imagine worse ways, but waking up and finding out from an email that some other girl has been banging your partner.
Yeah, especially with some video footage. That's a lot.
quite literally a lot.
Yeah. I don't need visual evidence. I didn't even ask for this email. It's a lot. Slow that down.
What I was thinking about earlier this week is I wish there was a Men in Black technology where you could literally erase things from your mind, but selective mind erasure. I don't want to forget my childhood memories, but sometimes you get put in a situation where someone sends you a video of your now ex-boyfriend in bed with another woman. That would be nice to scrub from your memory.
I would enjoy that. I would enjoy that. I would do that for embarrassing moments, all kinds of things. That I would not be trusted with that device.
But what I was really interested in is talking to her about her healing journey, because she is pretty fresh out of this breakup. I think it happened like a month ago, maybe.
Oh.
Like she hadn't even gone to therapy yet. Normally when I talk to people, they're like balls deep in therapy and they're like, yeah.
This is all new.
I know. She's basically learning how to trust people in a relationship again. And I guess for you, as someone who's had to learn not to trust people, what have been tactics for you to still be open to love, but also still having your guard up so you don't get catfished?
Well, I think for me at this point, I have decided to just take a chance. The worst thing that can happen has pretty much already happened for me. I'm setting my bar a little higher than I should. But I think just taking that chance, just literally risking it. What makes you brave is doing something even though you're afraid. Well, I don't want to say afraid, but, you know, even though you got hesitation to it and just jumping in there anyway. That's not something that I would have done before. And I've been doing that. So far, still a lot of flops, but I'm learning from these flops.
Well, I think it's easier said than done to be brave. So
yes, it is.
What makes you brave?
I think what makes you brave is just being willing to say, hey, I'm going to do this, and then actually following through. We all say that we're going to do something, but a lot of us don't do it. Mm-hmm. I think once you actually, the first time you follow through, for me anyways, it fills me up with like a, all right, I can check that off my hot list, because I feel like I accomplished something, no matter how small that step forward is, it's still a step forward. That's my motivation, is just to move forward.
Yeah. I actually did an episode like this, a bonus one, with a therapist whose name is Dr. Margaret Rutherford. And we did a whole deep dive on learning to trust again in a relationship. And she said something that coincides really well with what you just said. And she said, if you want to be able to trust other people again in a relationship, you have to relearn self-trust. And basically, it's kind of like what you said, doing the things that you say you're going to do. So if you're in a relationship and red flags start to come up, don't just ignore the red flags or justify them, but actually take a step back and think about it objectively. So going back and doing the work by looking at your past relationships and thinking, okay, what were the red flags that came up that I ignored or I didn't see in the moment that I really should have been more self-aware about and actually shut down? And I think through that, you start to build the self-trust again, and actually it makes you more open to trusting people because you are confident in yourself that if you find somebody, your radar is basically, you trust your radar. So when you see that, when you like are in a relationship with someone, it actually like ends up working.
That makes sense. I think that one of the things that people also need to remember, I feel like, is that just because you are afraid, it doesn't mean you can't. Or hesitant, it doesn't mean you can't. That feeling is just that. And what is bursting the picture all the time? What's on the other side of fear? Usually nothing. You won't know until you get over there.
Usually a failure for me. What's so funny is I do a lot of things that I think are scary or I have in the past. And normally I'm like, what's the worst that can happen? And then usually the worst happens. But maybe that's just my catastrophic personality coming out, or maybe
Murphy's Law.
Like what can go wrong? Is that absolutely going to go fucking wrong? Or at least that's what my anxiety tells me all the live long day. I think I'm kind of in a weird position in terms of trusting people in the sense that I don't trust nobody. Listen, you do this podcast long enough and you hear the shit that people do and you're like, you can't trust anybody out here. They're cheaters galore, narcissists out the wazoo. Like at this point, like I just need to build a boyfriend somewhere. I need to find like some kind of Frankenstein.
Where's Kevin? I don't understand.
For those of you listening, Kevin was my blow up doll boyfriend that somebody gave me for Christmas. We kept it in our studio that we work in.
Work boyfriend.
He was my work boyfriend and they threw him away.
What?
Right. I know. It's so stupid.
Rude.
I know. But yeah.
He belongs in the trash anyway with the rest of them.
I know. Another trash period. So he just joined the rest of the crew in there. But for you, what was something that really stood out in this episode about the whole story? Like, was there something that you heard that you really felt like you latched onto?
Yes. The love bombing. The love bombing. People think that that's not a red flag or they don't realize that it is love bombing, but I'm not saying that people can't feel strongly for you and explain that or share those feelings with you. That's possible. But if it's constant, it's nonstop, if they're making you feel like you have to cut yourself off from other people, all that's love, it destroys everything because you don't really know what's real. And the moment you stop giving that person what they want or what they expect because of all the quote unquote love bombing, you're almost nothing to them. It's almost as if whatever they're going through, it's being transferred onto you. You are that new addiction. Is love bombing worth what you think could happen? I say no, because it's toxic and it gets you stuck. Oh God. Yeah. The love bombing. I'm sorry.
So this is something that you personally experienced?
Yes. Oh, well,
talk about it, because I think it's way more interesting to hear from a personal standpoint as someone who like can recognize love bombing and realize that it's something that's really horrible in relationships.
Well, my ex, we were together on and off for like, oh my God, like 9-10 years on and off. It was crazy. And she used to do and say all the things that I wanted to hear, like future stuff, like, oh, one day we're gonna blah 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 and this and this. And then if she would do things like if I needed something like money for whatever it could be groceries, rent, whatever, she would send it. And then if I wanted to go out with my friends or something, it became, well, you know, who's going to be there? There's other women going to be there. It became, I have to text her the entire night and I can't enjoy anything that I'm doing. You know, there were lots of grand gestures that were done. I was offered to go on trips and just all kinds of stuff. But the crazy thing is none of it was real. It was all what I wanted. And I believed, because of all the breadcrumbing and love bombing and many other crazy terms of dating that I put up with, I ignored those red flags, even though almost none of those things were happening. It was just the illusion of what I thought it could be based on things that were said and done. And I just, I did not allow myself to see how many times she let me down, how many times she wasn't there. Like even when my mom died, she was nowhere to be seen. Super flaky, never there when I truly, truly, truly needed the emotional and intimate support. Only there for the easy stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's, screw her.
Well, I'm sorry. She should have been there for you when your mom passed. That's grade A bullshit, the fact that she ditched you in your time of need. But what would you say was the first sign that you clocked? Like, was there any point in that relationship where you thought, I think I'm getting love bombed?
Yes, but this is, okay, funny story. She did some like IG modeling and like modeling, dealing with like hair care and stuff like that. And she was doing really well. And she got to meet a lot of celebrities and things like that. One time she invited me to go on like to this like club thing. Cause I was living in LA at the time. And there was like this crazy club in Hollywood. And she invited me to go meet with all her friends and these celebrities and stuff. And me and my best friend, Chelsea, went. We're like, yeah, at the time, Chelsea, we were like, let's go. And I get dressed up. I go. I pay for the parking, all that stuff. It is $40 to get in. $40. Okay. She said she was going to put us on the list. She didn't. We get there. We go inside. We pay. She is nowhere to be seen. Completely ghosted me for the entire night. Didn't hear from her until the end of the weekend.
Oh, my God. Didn't you stay with her after that?
Yeah, I'm stupid. I told you. Oh, I should have said that. and there was other things too. That's just one of the things. But at the time, Abby, I thought that that was the best that I could do. I settled for nothing because I thought I was nothing. I thought that was the best I could do. Who else is going to love me? And if I share this with anyone else, they're going to say, oh, she's fucking stupid. I don't want to be with her. You know, so it's not something I enjoy talking about because it's so embarrassingly ridiculous. It's crazy what you, when you really, really want something versus the reality of what you can actually have.
I don't think it's ridiculous at all. I think it's really honest. And I think most people, if they're honest with the world or honest with themselves, we've all had at least one delusional relationship, whether it was something that actually played out in our minds, like maybe it was like a relationship that we wanted to happen, or maybe it was a relationship we were actually in, because so much, especially women, are so conditioned to want love and romance, because it's like a valid thing to want because it's out there. I think it's out there. People tell me it's out there,
yeah, right?
The movies are out there, but we're so, it's something that's so deeply ingrained in women, I think, to want. And when it's at our fingertips and it's kind of like we're chasing a dangling carrot. Yep.
Yeah.
It's right there. And it's just like, if this person would get their shit together, if this would just play out the right way, then all my happily ever after dreams would come true.
You're like sucking the words from my face and then saying my words out of your mouth. It's very disrespectful. I love it.
I'm just baby birding it to you.
Thank you. Yum, yum. I think also people need to pay attention to, just because you put in a certain amount of time does not mean you need to keep doing so. It is okay to realize, fuck, I just wasted a year. You don't need to keep trying to fix something that's dead. If your car doesn't have an engine, engines are super expensive. Let's just get a new car.
It's so funny. The two things that you just brought up are the two most common reasons people will tell me when I'm like, why did you stay in this relationship? It either has to do with their self-worth. Like, well, I just thought that this is the only person that would ever love me because they know me and they know how messed up I am. And I don't want to have to do that with a new person and then get rejected. And also the sunk cost fallacy, where people think, okay, I've been in this relationship for 9 years. I've done all this work to hopefully make something happen. It seems like it's just going to be a waste of time if I get out of it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. It feels exactly like that. Like, I just did all of this for nothing. I have to get something out of this. But I did get something out of it. I do have regret, but regret is not the end of the world. Regret, without it, you don't have lessons to learn. So I learned a lot from myself. And one thing that I think is a red flag for me is people who live without regret. That means they haven't learned a damn thing. They think that everything they're doing is golden, and that's not the case. Nobody is perfect. Nobody is everything. So if that's a red flag, listeners, if you are dating somebody that lives without regret, yo, you might need to take a look in the mirror and figure out what's going on.
Okay, bars. That came out. What are some of those lessons that you did take away from that relationship?
Well, one, I am definitely worth more than I thought that I was. I think that's the hugest lesson. I'm not trying to say that I'm completely out of the woods of this relationship. I have not spoken to her in months, and it feels so it feels so freeing, because that anxiety, that bad energy, those vibes are someplace else. I left that in another chapter. I'm ready to, I guess, write a new book. Screw the last book. I want a new book is what I want to do. But learning to also trust, not just learning to trust other people, but learning to trust in me to trust other people, because that's the person that I chose. And I really royally screwed up with that choice, which is a lesson that I learned. But I need to be able to trust myself that I can choose better. That does not mean that I'm broken. Mm. And that's something that I had to, that I'm working through currently.
Bars. Well, thank you, Amber, for coming on and sharing your words of wisdom, and also for reacting to this episode. I think you should listen to the episode I'm about to tack on to the end of our little chit chat. So for listeners tuning in right now, it's about to come up in like a second or two. It's a conversation I have with Dr. Margaret Rutherford all about trust. I think it's a conversation everybody needs to listen to when it comes to trust in relationships. And I think it would be very helpful for you.
I will. Thank you so much.
Heartbreakers, welcome back to another Breakdown bonus episode. Wanted to give you a heads up that we're touching on some sensitive topics in this bonus, so be sure to check the content warnings in the episode description. All right, let's get into it. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Margaret Rutherford. She is the host of the Self-Work Podcast and the author of Perfectly Hidden Depression. We are going to cover a wide variety of topics, but really going to be diving into self-trust and learning how to trust people again. So thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome, Abby. I'm delighted to be here. It's a real honor.
A real theme of this episode was a betrayal. Somebody, their boyfriend left them for their best friend. And that's a real deep hurt.
A double whammy.
Mm-hmm. A double whammy. But you actually said that you think learning how to trust yourself is the important thing here when it comes to diving into new relationships, right?
Yes. I was just talking to someone earlier today in session about the fact that so often we make the mistake of giving someone our trust blindly and not really waiting for them to earn our trust. I mean, I think that that's not that you want to advocate for everyone being distrustful and having huge long yardsticks of you have to do this and this and this before I trust you. But at the same time, I think that we begin to focus on, well, these are the things that should have told me that I couldn't trust this person. You know, the way they, I don't know, where they lived, what they looked like, what their job was, how they approached this, how they approached that. Actually, if you begin to focus on yourself and say, for example, what was the thing that I ignored from the very beginning of the relationship? Something that happened that now I look back on it and I thought, you know, that was really the beginning of, it was the little seed of something that I chose to ignore or discount, or I was afraid to see it. I didn't want to see it. I was in lust love, but often that is the thing that blossoms into the real problem. Let's say your ex was short and a student, loved to fish and flirted a lot. You could meet someone tall and who hated fishing and, you know, whatever I just said, and didn't flirt at all. It was very quiet. Oh, well, okay. Now I can trust this person. Wrong. Basically, you want to say, am I acting different in this relationship? All I have control over is what was my part of this relationship going awry. Now, this is not to say that is your fault or your responsibility because someone you chose to love or trying to love went outside of the relationship and had an affair with your best friend. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I talk about this with patients who come in, a couple who come in where there have been affairs. There is no excuse for someone going outside of the relationship to somehow take care of some need and then keep it a secret. Those kinds of things do happen in a context. And for you to be able to trust yourself that you're not recreating that same dynamic, maybe it comes from, you know, your family of origin where you had a parent who had affairs, or maybe it comes from all kinds of things in your childhood. Maybe you were abused and you don't recognize abuse. It could be so many things. And so you want to take a what I call an autopsy, which is sort of a gruesome term, but an autopsy of your part of the relationship that was good, that you think back and you go, you know what? I would do that all over again because that's what my strength is. That's who I want to be. That action represented my values. But at the same time, you say, you know, I was confused here. I was agitated here and I didn't say anything. What was it that was your part of this relationship relationship being disappointing that you can claim and that you can say, I need to work on this and not be in a relationship probably until I know that this is something I can achieve.
I've heard it said on multiple podcasts that sometimes we can find ourselves in relationships with really similar types of people. And it's because we can often go back to what's comfortable. Is there any truth to that?
It's familiar. Yes. I think the most recent example of that is someone I'm working with whose father was very abusive to her, very controlling of her. And she has sought relationships that were also very abusive and very controlling. And as I said a few minutes ago, could not see that as abuse because it was familiar. Now, we can take the opposite of that. We can take relationships that don't seem to have any boundaries, that there are no secrets. It's called enmeshment. You almost know each other's thoughts before you say them. And that's what they expect. And that's what's familiar. And so they choose people who do that with them because that's what love looks like to them. That feels familiar. Unfortunately, that often does not work out very well. Obviously, in the abusive relationship, it doesn't. But in enmeshed relationships, it also can get very, very sticky and, gosh, suffocating. So it's so important. You know, this is the least followed advice I ever give. That advice is wait. Wait until after a relationship that has been disappointing or very hurtful or just fizzled. Wait until you have enough time to look at exactly what we're talking about. What do I think was their responsibility? What do I think was mine? And what can I begin working on with my friends, with my work colleagues, to begin to see, how am I playing this out? You know, how can I see myself a little more objectively? I think it is so important. And I didn't follow my own advice years ago. Fortunately, I was married twice in my 20s because of this kind of immaturity. And then finally, when my now husband of 32 years asked me to marry him, I said, I don't want to lose you. And I really think I love you. And I think you love me, but I got to wait. I wanted to do some things differently. And we did do those things differently. And we waited, and we've been married for 32 years.
Getting divorced twice, I'm sure, was quite traumatic. And having to learn to trust again. What did you have to do to know that you could trust yourself to get into a third marriage?
If you want me to be frank, I had really used sexuality for control in relationships. That was not the thing to do. And I had also fought for control. I had to realize that I had grown up in a family where I was very controlled. And so I sought control, but I also hated control. And I fought against it strongly and used sexuality, sensuality in order to get my way. That doesn't work, not long term. I had to recognize that I was the common element. You know, it's one thing if you get divorced, and then it's another thing if you get divorced for the second time. You have to go, wait a minute, I am the common thread here. And as humbling as that is, it definitely makes you take a look at yourself and again, take responsibility for your part.
It's interesting that you brought up the sexuality thing for control and maybe on some level validation, because I asked my followers, I said, after listening to today's episode, you know, do you have any questions about self-trust and self-esteem? And someone said, will you ask about how to not use relationships and sex for validation? Like, how do I build my self-esteem from the inside versus outsourcing it from other people?
As soon as we're in a relationship, our defenses go way up and we pull out ways to make ourselves feel better that sometimes aren't new healthy ways. They're old unhealthy ways, right? And so basically, you know, when you recognize that you yourself have been using sexuality or anything like that to lure people into relationships or anything like that, then you have to say, what am I going to get? You know, when I do that, what's the most likely kind of relationship I'm going to get? A hypersexual one, one where, you know, you are usually expected to look a certain way and act a certain way and be a certain way, when really that was just the way I entered the relationship. That really wasn't me. I mean, I was a sexual human being, but that was sort of an act I was putting on. I had to learn how to be me and not rely on what I knew I could perform. I could perform in that way. I was a fairly attractive 28, 29 year old, and so it usually worked, but I had to learn that I had other strengths and other competencies. One of the questions you asked me from the very beginning was this woman had said she stayed because of self-esteem issues or something. One of the interesting things, and you know, psychologists, sometimes we get really overly picky about the meanings of words, but I do think there's a slight difference between self-esteem and self-worth. And the way I think about it is self-esteem is something that if I write down, what do I feel self-esteem about? Usually it would be about that I could cook some really good Italian spaghetti. I used to sing pretty well. I've got a podcast that I love. I'm going to name things that I think are my strengths. But my self-worth is more intrinsic. It's more innate than that. It is about who I am as a person, not my attributes, not my characteristics, not my strengths, not my vulnerabilities. It is about my intrinsic worth. When she said I stayed because of self-esteem, my guess is she stayed out of fear. Because when you're in a relationship where you're, I mean, I'm sure way before this guy had an affair with her best friend or started a relationship with her best friend, there were all kinds of signs going on that she was being ignored or demeaned or manipulated. And so, you know, what kept her from seeing those things? And so often it is fear, fear of being alone, all that kind of thing. That's why I say stay out of a relationship for a while, because you can build your sense of being okay with being alone.
Self-worth is one of those things that I feel like, you know, because it's so easy to outsource it from other places or getting validation to sort of put a band-aid over what we're lacking in our own self-esteem or self-worth. Is there anything you can do? Are there tangible steps you can take to fill that void within yourself instead of looking for it in other places?
When you're so busy looking for other people to fill you up, you miss the opportunities to have the recognition that your own presence in your own life, your own being, is important. I'll give people the homework assignment to go watch a sunset by themselves, to go on a walk by themselves, to do something that a lot of times, go have a picnic by the lake by yourself and enjoy it. Recognize that you enjoy your own sense of worth, your own being in that moment. Yes, would someone else's presence enhance that perhaps? Yes, but there are also things that you notice as a unique individual. It's not narcissism or grandiosity. It's just, I like what I see. I like the things that I am going to notice. A photographer is going to notice something on a walk that I would never notice until maybe I'm trying to learn photography. So I think that is, I know that sounds a little woo-woo, but it comes from within. And there's just no way to begin to get that in relationship until you have your unique understandings and how you see the world, and they have theirs. And then you come together and you begin to appreciate what the other one brings, because it enhances your life. You don't need it, but it enhances your life.
What I'm really hearing from that is self-worth almost goes hand in hand with building a really strong sense of identity and
yes,
feeling really comfortable moving in the world as a solo person. It's a really beautiful way of putting that. I hope I will be getting a lot of sunset photos after this episode airs.
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting thing to ask yourself to do. And believe me, I've had many a patient who has said, I can't do that. I would feel stupid. I would feel like people were looking at me. Well, what's she doing by herself? People are too self-absorbed. They don't really care.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit to some of the things that we were talking about earlier with self-trust and feeling betrayed. So in this particular episode, the person that we interviewed, her ex-boyfriend left her for her best friend. Something that I hear a lot in my messages and my emails is people will say, once I've gotten cheated on, I have a really hard time trusting my partner. I have all these intrusive thoughts saying I'm not with them. They're probably out doing something with somebody else. They have a hard time finding peace within themselves during, you know, a new relationship. If the thoughts start springing up, you know, a year into it, what are some things that people can do to combat that?
One, my very first answer would be you might need to seek therapeutic intervention, because it happened to me once. It's bound to happen to me again, is what's called a globalization of something. Meaning you take one specific instance of something happening and you make it, oh, that's going to happen for the rest of my life. And that's a cognitive behavioral error. However, it's also very normal. If this happened to me once, there's something wrong with my picker, or you were so hurt. There's a whole psychological disorder called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, where you really relive things and you are triggered by things that are similar to it. And so you go into those kinds of reactions and responses because of getting triggered. My husband now tells me, because my second ex had a terrible temper and was at times physically abusive to me. My now husband said at the beginning of our relationship that he could see me baiting him in some ways to make him mad, so I would be able to say, okay, I guess I'm safe, you know, because he hasn't hit me or screamed at me or whatever. So I was definitely playing out my fear of having chosen again. And basically about the only thing you can do is to say, you know, you're my first relationship after I had this really horrendous experience, and it hurt me deeply. And I've been to therapy, or I've really tried to work this out. I've read a lot of books, or I've journaled or whatever, but it's likely that I'm going to play this out with you. And I'm going to try my best to allow new information in as quickly as I can, but it may take me longer. And that's just a choice you're making when you pick me. I tell people all the time that, and I know this myself, that when we enter relationships with someone, we're giving them permission to bring us great joy, but we're also giving them permission to hurt us. Not like, oh, it's okay if you hurt me, but because I'm choosing to be vulnerable with you, you are more likely to hurt me than someone else who I have not been vulnerable with. So that's just a reality of being in relationship, but you can give somebody a heads up, and they may look at you and go, well, I don't really want to be in relationship with someone who is going to not trust me. And then you go, well, okay, so there's some information about this person. They need me to see them as the be all end all, and that I'm not supposed to have any kinds of issues. Well, thank you. Goodbye. Because if you're being honest, then you can say, this is going to be really hard for me. My now husband knew I had been tremendously hurt. And so he was prepared. He had also been hurt in another way, which is that's his life. So I won't share it. If it's a year or two or three into it and you're still struggling, then that's probably more about you, which you really then need to, it probably that distrust has its roots even further back than when you are so hurt by your ex. It's very likely to have really old roots that you don't understand yet. That's important to know as well.
I mean, I think that's so true about anything in life. If you're choosing to be vulnerable, like I'm about to take a new job and I was thinking, well, I'm so safe here at this job that I have now. And, you know, I know what expect, but kind of choosing, okay, you can stay on the sidelines and you know, you'll be safe on the sidelines, but get out in the game. Like you could end up scoring a touchdown or experiencing great joy. And there's probably going to be disappointment. You are opening up yourself up to getting hurt again, but would you rather be on the bench? This is a great pivot to the final thing I want to talk about. There was one term that was brought up a lot in this episode, gaslighting. Her ex-boyfriend basically gaslit her into thinking that nothing was happening with the best friend. And so that's how she ignored those signs that maybe something was happening in that pairing. And she chose to ignore it for self-esteem issues, but also, you know, not wanting to believe it as well. And the main question that people have been asking me since it aired is they're like, if I'm going through something like that and I feel like my partner is possibly gaslighting me, at what point do I draw boundaries and try and work through what I think may be gaslighting? Or when is it the right time to leave a relationship where I feel like I'm being manipulated in that way?
I read that question when you sent it to me, and I thought people who actually are gaslighting will not take responsibility for their behavior. So you trying to have a discussion with them about what's going on is not going to happen. Gaslighting is a very common manipulative technique by people with narcissistic traits who, in fact, more severe narcissism, kind of severe narcissism, where they really want to rob you of your sense of even safety and security about knowing who you are and what you think. This isn't about, oh, we did that at 3 o'clock. And they go, no, I think it was closer to 4. You know, this is about, oh, we did that at 3 o'clock. And they look at you and go, that didn't happen. What are you talking about? Unless you have been gaslit before and you are still fearing that other people are going to gaslight you, which is, again, maybe more of your issue, or maybe you've chosen someone who's just like the person you were with. But if you are suspecting it, or if your girlfriends or your boyfriends, you know, whatever, your friends' friends say, something's not right here. You're just not happy. You know, you seem to be losing security and you seem to be questioning yourself all the time, or you're saying you're sorry all the time, or we're seeing real changes in you. What's going on in your relationship? Listen to that, because that's important. They're seeing changes in your inner sense of self-security that they're concerned about. I'm not sure I'd come out and recommend anything, but I would certainly suggest that saying, you know, we need to take a break. I need to figure out what's going on. I'm going to seek some therapeutic advice. I don't feel good about what's going on in our relationship. And if they blow up with you, what are you talking about? I treat you like a king or a queen, and I can't believe you're saying this. Then you know what? That's a hint. Because if I tell someone that really loves me, I don't feel good about something that's going on with us, their response is going to be, well, what is it? And I want to hear it. And can we try to figure this out together? They're not going to get defensive. A narcissist or a person with narcissistic traits will get defensive. expensive and you've got your information. Are you going to listen to that information? Maybe not. Gaslighting is very, very hard to see when it's happening to you. When it's happening to somebody else, no problem, you can see it. But it's one of those very insidious kinds of things that can literally make you feel like you're losing your mind in its most severe form. And you're being told you are losing your mind. I remember my second ex used to say to me, better stay with me because if someone knew who you really were, someone knew what you were really like, they'd leave you. And he questioned everything that I thought. And that's why graduate school was so important, because I was like, oh, people think I'm actually know what I'm talking about sometimes. Count on the people who truly love you to give you honest feedback about what kind of changes they see in you. Relationships are supposed to build you up. Relationships are supposed to enhance you. Relationships, good relationships, are supposed to, you know, help you flourish as the person you want to be. And if they're not, then you're not in the right relationship.
So the last note I'd love to leave on, because it seems like we could chalk up all of these issues that we touched on today to really having a strong sense of self and self-worth and identity. If you could leave my listeners with just one pointer or one final takeaway for starting to build that really strong sense of self, what would you tell them?
A question I think that is very helpful. I mean, I've already said some of these things that I think are good, like, you know, wait, spend time with yourself, get to know how you uniquely see the world and honor that, write about it, whatever. But I also think sometimes that we treat ourselves very poorly. We know our vulnerabilities. We know the things that we feel shame about. We know the things, the mistakes we've made. And many of us, me included, for a long time, carry that around with an intense amount of shame. And someone who wants to manipulate you in a relationship will sense that, and they will poke the bear. They'll poke your shameful bear all the time. To realize, you know, I have a definition for the term self-acceptance, which again, we talk about self-worth, self-esteem, self-acceptance, I believe, is knowing that your strengths nor your vulnerabilities define you any more than the other. So that means I can have strengths, I can have vulnerabilities. Both of them are part of who I am. Neither one of them define me any more than the other part of me does. I pointed this out by saying I've been married 3 times, something I carried a lot of shame about for years. I have 3 letters after my name, something that's given me the license to do what I love to do. Neither one of those defines me any more than the other one. And I had to live a long time before I figured that out. If you want to hop on my whatever bit of wisdom I have, then maybe you can work on that definition of self-acceptance.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Dr. Margaret Rutherford, for joining us today. Again, be sure to check out her podcast, The Self-Work Podcast, for a wealth of more information on, I'm sure, topics just like this that are so topical and important to us today.
Thank you, Abby, so very much.